Thank you, NASA, Jason, and Adrian, and the world of the future.
Entertainment for the entire family produced right here in Kalamazoo.
Join us now for a voyage into another dimension. A journey into a realm as infinite and limitless as time itself. Our destination, the farthest reaches of the imagination. WMUK Special Projects presents Future Taste.
A double feature. First, Really Heavy by Ernest Canoy, with WBUK's Buck Evans in a special guest appearance as Buck Evans.
Ah, come in. Glad to see you. I'm Buck Evans. Just a minute, I'll close the door. You know, when you run a DJ show, the boys from the record companies just seem to ooze through the grain of the wood. There. Now we won't be bothered for a while. Have a seat. You do the writing for that really heavy show on WMUK, don't you? That Future Tense with the rocket ships and the three-headed men from Mars and all that stuff. That's why I asked you up. I ran into a little something. Just an idea, you know. I figured maybe you could work it up and use it. It's about a friend of mine, Ralph Therrien. Ever hear of him? He's an artist. I don't mean albums or rock. I mean an artist, a sculptor. I ran into him over in Nam. He used to sit in camp making busts of the sergeants out of G.I. soap. When they had him on KP, they couldn't trust him to peel potatoes. He'd end up doing caricatures of the captain and the lieutenants out of raw spuds. Man, he was far out. He got the whole company restricted for a week when we were supposed to be in R&R in Hawaii. He made a life-size statue out of raspberry jello depicting the captain sitting in one of those howdah things on the back of an elephant. The captain didn't mind so much, but the elephant happened to look like LBJ. And the big brass took a dim view of the entire affair. Ralph studied in France somewhere before he was drafted. And when he got back, I used to run into him once in a while downtown, looking kind of hungry and desperate. Then one day, a couple or 3 weeks ago, I ran into him in Bronson Park, and man, he looked like he belonged. He had a pair of those wire-rimmed glasses, tinted a kind of puce color, and a sharp set of Yves Saint Laurent threads. And he was carrying a snakeskin dispatch case.
Hey, Buck. Buck.
Yeah. Well, hello, Ralph.
Oh, you're looking great.
Thanks, my friend. But what brings you over here to this bastion of respectability?
Oh, I was just up at the art center seeing a client.
A client? You've given up the sculpting, kid?
Oh, no, I'm just working in a new medium.
Well, you look real prosperous.
How do you like these shoes?
Oh, very dapper, very dapper. I don't believe I've ever seen lizard skin haraches before.
Had them imported. Made underwater by natives of Ecuador. Takes about 3 hours to have them made. They use up about 12 natives per pair.
Well, you give the general impression that you're loaded with bread.
Oh, I am. Why, there's money in art. Money. You just got to get something new. Now, here, wait a minute. Let me show you. Take a look at this.
What is that? An ice cube?
Oh, no, look inside.
What is it?
That is a detailed copy of Rodin's The Kiss.
Pretty sexy. How do you do it?
Well, you see, I carve it from underneath the plastic block.
Well, it looks sort of solid to me. How do you get in?
Oh, no, look at the bottom. You see that little hole?
Yeah.
I worked through there with my engraving instruments. Of course, this is just a sample. I've been doing originals, mostly.
What are the little cubes good for? Paperweights, I guess, huh?
Well, this is art, Buck. Art. Do you know how much I get for one of these?
Beats me.
$5,000.
That's a pretty stiff price for a paperweight.
Oh, you just don't understand, Buck. This is the hottest thing since Picasso. I just sold two original compositions to Morgenstern. You know, the dealer from Chicago. For $25,000.
$25,000?
Wow. I should have paid attention when Mama bought me that clay when I was a little boy.
Well, it's about time the creative artist got a little bit of recognition.
Recognition's not the point, man. For 25,000 big ones, I wouldn't care if people never asked for my autograph.
That's because you're not an artist. Money is secondary.
Money is never secondary. Money is the primariest thing there is.
Now, Buck, would you be interested in a fine original composition?
Well,
I'll make a special price for you. $4,000.
No, Ralph, my friend, no. I keep my papers from blowing off my desk with my right foot and my left piled one on top of the other. I find that quite adequate to my needs and aspirations.
Buck, the trouble with you is you've got no artistic soul.
The trouble with me is I have not got $4,000. This sort of thing is happening to me all the time. For example, I have a barber who plays the Bach chaconne with a quarter-inch drill and a length of steel pipe. A big hit every year at the Bach Fest, and my own discovery. I figured Ralph Therrien was stringing me until I ran into Lawrence Osmond. Now, Larry is one of those men who leads a double life. He composes concerti and avant-garde operas while teaching at Western, but he's better known in soft rock circles as Larry Oz. He got in on the ground floor with Bubblegum Psychedelia, and he took an already substantial fortune and ran it up into a fantastic munificence. Larry has money that hasn't even been folded yet, and he collects art. I was up at his house one night discussing such things as Inner Visions and Butzek by Alban Berg. Then, Larry got around to showing me his collection.
Now this is Picasso.
That's what I call far-out brushwork, my man. Out of sight.
I hold it next to the Tintoretto for contrast.
This stuff must run into a lot of bread.
Well, I figure since I launched that great concept album, Ragas to Riches, on the unsuspecting public, the least I can do is collect old masters and leave them to the nation when I die. Here's the latest. Look, isn't it beautiful?
You mean this hunk of plastic?
Yes, look into it. That design, that composition, the delicacy of that light. This is the most exciting discovery in art since the invention of red paint.
Larry, was this piece of Jim Cracky executed by one Ralph Therrien?
Oh, that's right. You know him?
Mm-hmm.
Remarkable talent, remarkable. A genius.
And how much did this stroke of genius cost you? If you don't mind my mentioning a crude thing like money.
Not at all. It was a steal. I got it from Morgenstern in Chicago. Oh, I outfoxed him. I got it for only $30,000.
Gee, yeah, you outfoxed him, all right. Now tell me something, Larry. What makes this worth $30,000?
Buck, what makes a Gibson worth $300? And a guitar played at a barn dance worth $30, huh?
You mean this stuff is that good?
It's art, Buck. This is art. This is genius, to work with such delicacy and such control in so small a space. Well, you see, that's it. This plastic block is, how long? About 2 inches. And yet within this 2 inches is the majesty, the feeling of a sculpture 20 to 30 feet high. This is an art which has not been known in the world since the painters of miniatures in the Renaissance.
Man, is that for real?
For real? This is the gem of my collection. The Picasso, the Renoir, the Cezanne will in time fade into insignificance. This is a new art form. Brilliant, brilliant.
I let Ralph Therrien's new art form slip my mind for a while I struggled with record reps, advertising salesmen, account executives from the agency, all trying to give me something. Then, a few weeks later, I met Ralph at a small cultural establishment on the corner where I work. You might call it a sort of local chamber music society with a brass rail.
What's the idea of putting this lemon peel in? If I wanted lemonade, I'd ask for it.
How do you do, Ralph, my friend?
Oh, Buck.
You look like you're thriving, my man.
Well, as a matter of fact, I just signed a contract with Morgenstern to deliver $100,000 worth of my original compositions. I'm celebrating.
In here? Man, this place is only good for sweating out the downhill phase on a manic depressive psychosis.
Oh, I'm just starting here. I intend to work my way up. Buck, be my guest.
Well, I just had a difficult morning with my station manager, who has an illusion in his Mickey Mouse mind that my program is the answer to Lawrence Welk. I was in the mood for soaking up some suds and forgetting. Several hours later, Ralph was feeling very confidential.
Buck, I trust you.
I'm touched.
And so, Buck, I'm going to take you to my studio. My secret studio.
and I will reciprocate, my friend. Tomorrow, when I'm doing my fabulous DJ show, you may come to my secret studio.
Oh, what time is it?
1:30 something.
Then
I'm late. Hurry! He took me to a loft somewhere off Portage. He had 3 locks on the door, and he opened them with 3 separate keys. I stepped inside and took a look around. The loft stretched a whole block. The only thing that kept the WMU hockey team from using it as a practice rink was the lack of ice. It was empty, except in one corner of the room, there was a nest of machinery. Looked as if someone had eviscerated a television set and left it to die of shock. There was a wimpy-looking little guy in a shiny blue suit standing in the middle of the floor, tapping his foot.
Darian, I've been waiting half an hour. Where have you been?
Now, take it easy, Burson. Take it easy. There's plenty of time.
I told you, the active life of the catalyst is over.
Who's this?
Well, this is my friend, Buck Evans. Well, who is he, and what's he doing here? I told you we must have no one
here. Now, he's my friend. I trust him.
Oh, I suppose you've told him all about it.
Well, yes, I have. Now, have you got the stuff?
Certainly, 3 bottles, but it won't last. You've got to hurry. Roll up your sleeves.
Oh, now, just a minute. Both of you gentlemen. If I've been brought down here to witness the inoculation of a little instant nirvana into somebody's arm, I'm leaving. I have no desire to tangle with
the cops. Oh, now, Buck, do I look like the type that would be shooting up?
I wouldn't swear to it.
Now, you don't understand. But in those little glass bottles is the secret of $100,000.
Right, the kazoo connection. I'm leaving.
Oh, no, wait. Let me show you what I do. Now, come on. Now, first, I take a plastic cube out of my pocket. Hit so. Now, we put it down in the grid in the middle of the floor, so. And now, if you'll kindly step to the outside of the white line there painted on the floor. Back there. Yeah, go ahead. Now, Mr. Burson, we'll turn on the machinery. And now I take this vial of catalyst, thus, and pour it over the plastic block, so. And now, we wait.
We stood there at the edges of that loft and watched that tiny plastic block sitting in a frame in the middle of the floor. And then, suddenly, it began to grow. In about 20 minutes, that cute little plastic block stood about 20 feet on a side. It almost touched the skyline. And it was about a foot of clearance on each wall.
See, the long organic chain of molecules in the plastic is infinitely expandable under the right conditions.
Is that a fact?
By applying the right voltages in series, we can expand the cube to about this size. But there is an outside limit due to the cohesive charge on the molecule.
Oh, yeah, naturally. Of course, those molecules do stick together.
Well, it's the catalyst that does it. And I make that. I make the catalyst. Do you hear that, Darian?
Calm down, Burson. Without me, you just have a great big blob of plastic. I'm the one who turns it into money. You see, Buck, a cube this big is as soft as putty inside. And I take my pneumatic drill and I make a hole in the bottom. And then my tools and I start to carve my pretty sculptures inside.
Darian, I'm warning you, I won't take this kind of treatment
for long. Now, calm down, Burson. You're getting your 10% cut.
10%! Why, before I brought you this process, the only artwork you could get was graffiti in the men's room at McDonald's.
Person, that is the typical wailing of a non-creative technician. Envy, pure envy for genius. Now look out. I'm going under there and start work.
I want 50%.
Darian,
50%. That's only fair, isn't it? I put it to you, Mr. Evans.
Just include me out, guys. Leave me out of it.
I'm warning you, Darian. I'm warning you.
Just get out of my way, grease monkey. Let an artist work.
Ralph crawled under the giant cube and started to work. I could see what he was drawing. A collection of lovely ladies. Something like the last scene of the cheerleaders meet the stewardesses at the Alice Cooper benefit ball. Didn't look very good. The lines were kind of thick and muddy. It had a kind of soft and sloppy quality to it, like he was carving in butter. It took him about an hour. And then he crawled out.
Oh, just about in time. Now, what's it say on that watch? You've got about 20 seconds left.
You cut it pretty fine there.
Well, it's all right. It's a masterpiece. Now, wait a minute. Okay? Now, there she goes.
Well, now, what happened was that plastic cube that was blown up to about 20 feet on the side suddenly popped like a balloon with a cigarette stuck in it. And what ended up was that tiny little 2-inch cube sitting in the middle of the floor. Ralph picked it up and brought it over.
Oh, look at it. Beautiful, beautiful. A work of genius.
A work of technology.
It makes a real nice paperweight.
Buck, my friend, what you have just seen was the creation of a $20,000 masterpiece. Take a good look.
I did take a good look. The whole design was there. But what had looked to me like kind of a muddy, buttery picture when it was 20 feet high was now sharp and beautiful and clear as a snowflake. The next day, I got a telephone call just before I went on the air. It was Ralph, asking me to come over to the studio. He said it was important. So, after the show, I shook the last payola panderer out of my lapels and went down to Ralph Therian's loft. I found that fellow Burson, walking up and down at the edge of the room, looking at a stopwatch nervously. They had another plastic cube blown up in the middle of the room, and Ralph was inside the cube, working. They were having quite an argument.
I know you got paid off today, Therian. $100,000. I know you got it, and I want my share. 50%.
Don't bother me. I'm working.
Hi, Ralph.
Oh, hi there, Buck. Just a minute. Wait till I crawl out.
I warned you. You can't say I didn't warn you. There'll be no more of the catalyst. No more.
Now, listen to him, Buck. That's why I asked you over. I wanted a witness, and you're the only one who knew all about it already.
Now, look, guys. I told you not to get me involved.
Now, listen. This little worm, this test tube termite, had the gall to threaten to not bring any more of that catalyst. Yes, I warned you. I warned you. I want my share of that $100,000.
If you'll excuse me, I'll get back into that masterpiece. That catalyst is only good for 2.7 hours. Hand me that drill, will you, Burson?
Here it is. But I warn you.
Oh, boy, that plastic is tough today. It's a lower grade.
I warned him. He must have the money here somewhere.
What are you doing over there, Burson?
Looking, just looking. Bills, check stubs.
Well, if you're looking for that $100,000, you can stop. I've got it right here in my pocket. Now, don't bother me while I finish work.
What? Therian, come out here. Come out.
I've got to finish. Just a little more.
Come out. You don't understand. Come out. Get out of the way, Mr. Evans.
With pleasure.
Therian, hand me that money, quick.
Get out of my way, Burson. I'm working.
But listen, you don't understand. The catalyst.
Let go of me.
The catalyst. I need it up half strength. Give me that money, quick. The money.
That's all there is to it. I figured that little fellow from the plastic company figured he'd get himself a new sculptor when he made up that catalyst half strength. The two of them were in there when the roof fell in. The roof and the wall. Well, that's about all there is to it. Figured you might be able to use the story. I wrote a few notes on it. They're here somewhere. Under this paperweight. Oh, would you like to see the paperweight? Little plastic cube, about 2 inches. But heavy. Really heavy. Look in there. Two fellas with their hands around each other's throat. Pretty heavy, huh? As if they were squeezing. Of course, this one's an improvement on the work Ralph Therian did. This one's in full color.
Third from the Sun, by Richard Matheson, adapted especially for Future Tense by John Scott.
Did you sleep?
Not really. Did you?
Oh, a little. Not much.
Are we still going?
Yes.
What time is it?
About 5.
We'd better get ready then.
Yes, I guess.
You sure we can get on the ship without anyone suspecting?
It's just another routine test flight as far as they're concerned. Security won't be that tight.
I feel cold. I guess I'm afraid.
Don't be. We'll be safe.
It's the children I worry about.
They'll be fine.
You're sure we won't need anything else with us?
No, nothing. I've hidden everything we'll need in the ship. Little each day. Besides,
what?
Everything's got to look routine. We can't carry anything past the guard. It's got to look like you and the kids are just coming to see me off.
But what about Frank and Sylvia and their kids?
What do you mean?
Well, won't the guard think it's funny that our neighbors are coming down to see you off, too?
We need them with us. Well, we'll have to chance it.
I know, but...
There's no other way. We can't interbreed our own children.
I'll wake them. It's all right, darling. Just drink your juice. It really doesn't matter if the place is left clean.
Pretty soon, huh, Pop?
Oh, take it easy, son. Now, remember, if you mention a word of this to anyone, I'll be forced to leave you behind.
Sure, Pop. I understand.
Oh, good boy. Now, finish your breakfast. The Smiths will be here, and we'll have to leave soon.
Why are the Smiths coming with us?
Please, Janie, don't ask so many questions.
Just because they want to, dear. Now, finish your breakfast.
Children, answer the door.
Both of us?
Both of you. Tell the Smiths we're almost ready. You can all wait for your mother and me in the station wagon. We'll be right along.
Okay.
Darling, please, please. We have no choice. You know I wouldn't take you and the kids if there was any other way.
I know. But leaving, never coming back... When we've been here all our lives.
But there's no other way. Why, in a matter of years, maybe less, there'll be a terrible war. The race will destroy itself. Nothing will remain. You know it as well as I do. For the sake of the children, of the race, for life itself, we've got to leave.
I know.
You know how many times I've flown the ship before, and I know just where we're going. Now, believe me, it's got to be safer than staying here.
Should we lock the door?
Does it matter?
Did you lock your house?
Yes. So did we. I tried not to, but then we had to go back.
It's going to be a nice day after all.
I suppose so.
Have you told your children?
No.
Neither have we. You ever get the feeling we're running out?
No.
I guess it's best not to talk about it.
Remember, children, not a word from any of you.
Good morning, Sergeant.
May I see your clearance?
Oh, good morning, sir. Looks like it's going to turn into a beautiful morning, doesn't it?
Yes. My family came down to see me off.
Yes, sir, I see that. But I have no clearance for them. No offense intended, sir.
Oh, none taken, Sergeant. But what good is my rank without an occasional special privilege, eh? I'll assume full responsibility for their welfare, Sergeant. After all, it's just a routine test flight, and all they want is a quick tour of the ship.
Well, it's highly irregular, sir. But if you're assuming the responsibility,
I... full responsibility, Sergeant.
Very well, sir. Please use gate 3.
Look, the sun. I had no idea it could be so beautiful.
Oh, let's go. Quickly, everyone, into the elevator. Oh, wait a minute. Some dirt here. For luck. Goodbye, planet. Come on, everybody. Quickly. That's it.
Look. So high.
So high, dear.
Shouldn't we tell the children? Shouldn't we tell them it's their last look?
Go ahead, dear. Tell them.
Goodbye.
You know where we're going? On that chart there, in another solar system.
Another solar system?
That's right. In an atmosphere like ours. We'll be safe there.
The race will be safe. The children are still looking out the ports. I hope we can make a better world for them.
Yes. Let's hope that we've left hatred and intolerance behind.
Which one of the planets is it we're going to?
Oh, that small one over there.
Near that moon.
This one? Third from the sun? Yeah, right. That one. Third from the sun.
WMUK Special Projects has presented a double feature. Really Heavy was written by Ernest Canoy, based on an idea by Al Collins, with additional material by Bill Rupp. WBUK's Buck Evans played, of all people, Buck Evans. Mark Stink was featured as the late sculptor Ralph Therian, Richard Neesink as his equally late scientific collaborator Burson, and John Scott as the fabulous Larry Oz. Third from the Sun was written by Richard Matheson, and adapted especially for Future Tense by John Scott. Our cast included Mark Spink, Peg Small, Roy Beck, Pat Polano, Cullen Bailey, and John Scott. Future Tense is produced and directed by Ellie Siegel. If you are enjoying these Future Tense programs and would like to hear more drama on WMUK, please let us know. Address your comments as well as suggestions for future programs to Future Tense, WMUK, Western Michigan University, Kalamazoo, Michigan. The zip code is 49001. This is Gerard McLeod inviting you and your entire family to join us every Monday through Thursday at... McLeod inviting you and your entire family to join us every Monday through Thursday at...